Welcome to the Kingdom Roots Podcast with Scott McKnight, the conversation designed to look at how the kingdom took root then and how it's taking root now. My name is Laura Tarot, and today on the podcast, we have Scott Nelson as our guest to talk about his book, Supply Lines, Five Supporting Relationships Every Planter and Pastor Needs. And this book identifies five supply lines or types of relational support that pastors and planters need: spiritual, inspirational, motivational, interpersonal, and practical. Scott Nelson is a church planter and lead pastor of Covenant Grove Church in Modesto, California, and he also serves as a church planning coach and trainer. So Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here with you both. I've listened to pretty much every episode, so it's such a thrill to be here sharing with you.
And Laura has come out of retirement as the podcast host to do this one. And Cody and I are setting up some others. We're going to talk about the New Testament and its relationship to the state. So a little bit about politics.
Nice.
For about eight, probably at least eight sessions. It'll probably turn into 15. But this is unusual for me because I had Scott as a student when I still had more hair, and his hair was a different color.
That's right.
And this was way back in the mid-90s, and Scott was at North Park, and he was a Bible major, and he had a girlfriend that he married, and she came to North Park after this while Scott was in seminary at this Covenant Seminary, and I have joyfully followed his career. I remember when you were pastoring, wasn't it? You know, I won't get into that because I don't know the whole story, but pastoring in another church. And now you've done your doctorate in sort of in church planting, but in the relationships that pastors, church planters need to sustain, to maintain, develop, sustain in order to cope with the challenges of church planting. And Laura is a church planter, so I'm just going to ask you two to talk about these five themes. And if I think I have anything to say, I might chirp up, but I doubt that I will. So Scott, what are the what's the first one?
Yeah, the first one is spiritual. And before I get into those, these kind of took me by surprise because it started in my dissertation as a research project, and it was for the denomination. And I was really just asking church planters and coaches and directors of church planning and network leaders what's working and what's not working. And a lot of things got brought up, but I was very surprised at how often support came up, a lack of support or support that you had at the beginning, which then disappeared, leading to isolation and loneliness a few years in. And as I started listening and collating these notes, because I wasn't really allowed to share a lot, I was just listening and taking notes, I was surprised at how they sort of collated into these five categories of things that people were saying, well, this is what I wish I would have had, or this is the person I wish I would have had, or a combo that I wish that would have really helped me. And the first one is spiritual. Ironically, church planters early on did not mention this. It wasn't until about year four, and there's a whole section of the book that talks about the unique challenges of years 4 through 10, because almost nothing is written about that. Churches at that stage are not established yet, but they're not babies either. So right around year four, spiritual starts to pop up in the research where they're going, I had to get on my face before God. I had to seek out people who were not always practical, but they were just going to speak to my soul. I needed to get right with the Lord. You don't realize when you first start any venture, could be pastoring, planting, that you have all this support in you. And it starts to fade over time. And it's not until a few years in where you go, oh my gosh, I'm empty. And then you don't realize, oh, it takes a couple of years to build it back up. So that is a really hard time for many people in ministry, in church planting of, hey, I'm 3, 4, 5 years in, and I got nothing in the tank. And
yeah,
I know what I need to do. I just got nothing to do it with. And
That's so interesting. I think that makes a lot of sense, because from my experience, you really do start out with a cloud of people surrounding you, running with you, encouraging you. I'm still very much in that phase where you've got trainers and coaches and network support all around you. But I can imagine that as you become more sort of self-sufficient, that people start to fall back, and then they're supporting new planters and new pastors. And they just expect you to be able to run on your own. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Scott.
The one of the things that this is really more about pastoring, but it's very simple, very easy to slip into the mode of reading the Bible for the sake of preparing sermons and talks, and praying over the talks you're going to give and the sermons you're going to give and the deacons that you want to leave the church, that sort of thing. Rather than for it to be, you just read the Bible for the sake of listening to what God might say. And that requires tranquility and time. So
yeah.
I can see that. It's almost like, let's say for years 1 through 3, you're running on adrenaline or something like that. And then all of a sudden you don't have any adrenaline left. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's like that quote. I think we've mentioned it here. You all have mentioned it here. I heard it recently. It's that the scariest thing about ministry is you can get good at it.
Mm.
You know, you stop relying on God, and there are skills related to ministry, and you can be good at doing it and not have anything going on in the inside. So the spiritual person, a soul sharpener, sometimes I call them, is just they ask you the important questions. They tend to your soul. I think it's actually helpful when I go through all five and I say, imagine you had the same problem. I mean, just imagine a problem that you're going through, right? You show up and someone has vandalized the donut shop where you're meeting, right? and you get through the morning and you're debriefing with one of these five people. Well, the soul sharpener is going to say, that's really tough. I'm really sorry. Where was Jesus in that?
Mm.
Right. Mm. The vision caster, the inspirational person, they're the big dreamer. They go, what could that become? How big could that, the donut shop's been vandalized, but what could God be doing in that? How big could that become? They're always thinking, what if, why not, how big? The motivational person's like, but you did it. And if it happens again, you're going to do it. And this is what's going to happen. And they're kind of a tail kicker in your life. They encourage you. They believe in you. They're willing to speak hard truth because they believe in you, and interpersonal. Those are the friends who are just kind of like, that stinks. Let's cry. Let me be shoulder to shoulder. This could be where therapists fit in, where friends fit in. And then the practical person, the strategist, they're going to say, okay, how about cameras? How about we start setting up cameras? What about a security ministry? And you realize that one person cannot be all five of these things. One conversation cannot be all five of these things. And we need all five of these things as leaders, as pastors, as church planners. And when we don't get them, we end up having these gaps in our support. And the concept of supply lines comes from trees. If you cut off the roots, the tree's going to die. It comes from plumbing, that there's multiple sources. It also comes from the military, where in attack, it's usually more often that you attack the supply lines rather than the army, because the supply lines are more vulnerable. And if you cut off a soldier's ammunition and their food, it doesn't matter how good of a soldier you are, the battle's over. And I think this is one of the things Satan does is he isolates pastors, and we tend to isolate ourselves. So then it doesn't matter how strong we are, how much grit we have. It doesn't even totally matter if we're like, hey, I love Jesus. If you're alone, you're done. And
That's so good. I like that you're talking about the need for multiple sources of support and also multiple kinds of support. So I can think in the covenant denomination, pastors are constantly encouraged to have both a therapist and a spiritual director, which meets a couple of those pieces. But I think what you're talking about is broadening that out to a couple different categories. And I think about this a lot. There was a point in my little tiny baby church plant. We had a leadership team where there were three people plus me. And at one point, one of them said, hey, you know, I've noticed that we tend to always be in agreement. Like, you know, Laura brings up an idea and then we talk about it for a while and then we all immediately agree. And she said, I'm starting to wonder if we need some people in the room that aren't always going to agree. And I thought, well, that's really wise. And so we kind of broadened out a little bit. And I said, okay, so what I hear us identifying is we need some folks who ask really good questions so that we won't just immediately agree and feel good about ourselves and go forward. Like, we need some people who are going to push back a little bit. So I think that's kind of getting at what you're talking about, like the need to have different voices speaking into what you're doing, who can see things you don't see.
Yeah.
What's number two? What's number two?
Number two is that inspirational person, that vision caster, that big dreamer. Often what happens for a lot of planters and pastors is they don't seek out support where they need it, where they're already strong. So they go, I'm already strong in that. And so I got this big idea and I'm a big dreamer. That's why I'm a pastor. That's why I'm a church planner. And everyone likes my ideas. That's why, Laura, you didn't need anyone else because your ideas were just so good. Everyone had to agree. But the vision, but what's so important is you need support even where you're strong, because it makes your strength stronger. There's nothing like having if you're a big dreamer, there's nothing like having your dream get bigger by talking to a big dreamer. It's also nice not to have your leadership team or your church be the first people who've heard your idea. So they're hearing this raw, unfiltered, unprocessed, unrefined idea. Typical thing, you go to a conference or you read a book and you start unloading this on everybody and they're going, what? You talk to a vision caster and they're going to go, man, this is great. Half of that's off. We're going to refine that. What about this? How could this be? How are you going to do that dream plus the dream that you talked about last week? So they're asking these really good, big questions that it's still your vision. It's not their vision. They're catalytic to help you dream big, and they help refine it. So by the time it goes even to your inner circle of people, you've actually processed it a little bit with some people who have some experience and typically outside of your church, maybe inside your church. Yeah, that's the second one.
Yeah, that's really good, because I've definitely been in ministry settings where the lead constantly has ideas. And so the staff is always reeling because we're just swinging from one great idea to the next without much time for implementation. It's like, but what was the big idea last month? Because we've already moved on to something totally new. So that's a good word about having other people help you filter those.
Even in your area of strength. So let's say you're a contemplative person. It's still good to have a spiritual director, you know, or whatever. If you're a strategy person, it's still good to have a practical person in your life.
Yeah, that's good. So what's the third one?
The third one is encouraging tail kickers. And these are people who believe in you, but also know how to motivate you. And again, one person can cover two of them. So you might have and this is why I think the categories are more helpful than the titles, because someone can say, well, I have a coach. Well, if your coach only talks about your spiritual life, they're not covering the practical. And this is something I'm trying to talk about in church planning circles is if we can use the categories, you may assume a coach is talking all the practical, but if the planter is always bringing up my soul's hurting, most coaches are pastors. They're going to listen and respond spiritually. So we got to kind of know those lanes. And even when we're coaching people, even on my staff, I say, which one am I to you? I write it down. Mm-hmm. And before I go into the meeting, I go, okay. And I can't be all five either. It's something that only I cover in the 10th chapter, which is how to do this for other people, how not to pretend like you're everything. One of my misunderstandings is that your spouse can't cover all five supply lines. And a lot of people as church planning goes on, and even pastoral ministry goes on, people leave, they criticize, we get hurt. And so a natural reaction is we decide we're not going to trust again, or we only trust superficially. And then we either have a very small circle, no supply lines, or it all gets put onto our spouse if we're married. And that's a very heavy burden for one person to carry. We encourage people to do that. Encouraging tail kickers are the people who can love on you, care for you, and also kind of go, come on, you got this. Step up, let's keep going. You're not done. Usually combined with another one as well, but they'll kind of default into that.
Scott, are these people outside your church or are they inside your church, supply lines?
I think at least some of them will be outside of your church. I found for clergy, they have a hard time being fully vulnerable with people who are not outside their church and or clergy themselves. It's hard for someone who's working graveyard shift on a railroad help people understand what that's like. And it's the same with pastoral ministry. It's you spend a lot of time trying to apologize for your lament and going like, I know it's not that bad and people take me out to lunch, but when I'm out to lunch, 75% is listening to this person's problem. And that was really hard. And people are like, oh, it must be nice to go out to lunch for free. And not that people always say that, but just when you're with other clergy or you're with people outside the church, their default is in caring for you and trying to relate to you. I've also found that one of the problems with pastors, it's really hard for them to stop pastoring people. I was meeting with somebody and she was inside my church and she's an amazing leader. And she said, well, how are you doing? This meeting's for you. And I said, yeah, I'm great. How about you? How are the kids? How's life? How's family? Everything. And she goes, nope. You're not allowed to pass me. I told you this meeting was for you. And I went, oh my gosh, this is great. I mean, if you ask most pastors, how many meetings a month do you have where it's primarily you serving others? They're primarily about others. They would say probably 30, 40, 50. And then I say, well, how many meetings a month do you have that are primarily for you? Some people would say none, one, maybe two. And study after study is being released about the dangers of isolation and loneliness. And when the people who are providing care for our people are themselves lonely, we got a big problem.
Yeah, that can quickly become dangerous. And there's a need for pastors themselves to have places where they're pastored by other people. And I do think that one of the things I've been learning is how important it is for pastors to have collegial friendships with other pastors, because there's something about you don't have to do the whole backstory. You don't have to explain, you know, the intricacies of the what of your job. You already know that because you do the same work. And you can sit down and talk about what's hard right now. What are you learning right now? What are you excited about? And there's just a big need for that, just for our own development, but also just those friendships. And it's hard to develop those kinds of friendships that with people outside of clergy ministry relationships, just because they don't know all of the pieces that you have to hold as a pastor.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, there's a...
Okay, I'm going to ask a question, see. Okay, I've heard this statement for pastors. You have to care for everyone. You have to like everyone. But you can only trust... Be careful who you trust. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, it's all true with, you know, obviously lots of caveats. Trust is not an all or nothing thing. It's gradation. I heard someone say that you don't share your wounds on stage, share your scars. You know, there's times where we overshare and then we get hurt because it was too much for someone. So even in this process of seeking out support, I tell people, one of the things that happens with clergy is once we find a single safe space, like a therapist, but imagine it wasn't a therapist and we just have someone, we feel like they understand us, and suddenly we've overshared. And then it's like, well, I can't say anything. I'm embarrassed now. We want to take the time to start. Someone said, don't ask someone to be your mentor. Just have some good questions and go out for coffee. And if it goes well, then say, hey, this was really helpful. Can we go out for coffee again or lunch? I got more questions. Hmm. And you just start asking questions. You just have this posture of humility and curiosity. And, you know, you have a lot to bring me. And they don't have to always be older than you are. It could just be like, I really respect your ministry. I really enjoy this time. You keep doing that. And then suddenly you build it in to, hey, this seems to be helpful. And then you could, hey, could we do this every month? Would that work? So that's how you grow trust. I think, trust can be lost quickly, but it takes time to grow.
Yeah.
That's good. So tell us about the interpersonal supply line.
Yeah. So interpersonal is basically, this is our heart healer. So our heart has been beat up and kicked on and everything else, or we're going through those sort of things, or it's just friends, just being together. So, you know, imagine that you're hurting, and I'm going to speak to this kind of from my world, where someone comes up and they say, man, we need to talk about this, talk it out. And other times my friends are like, dude, get over it. Let's go watch a movie. You know, let's go shoot some food. You know, let's go. And that, I need both. That's all in the interpersonal. It's just kind of like the, yeah. I hear you. That sucks. You know, let's go out and do something together. And that's how my friends kind of helped me, and just kind of like, yeah, you're right. I mean, let me focus on something else. Let me be with people whose company I enjoy. And it's so helpful. It's so building. But again, the studies show that most clergy do not have a single close friend in their lives, inside or outside the church. Yeah. And Laura, you mentioned earlier, collegiality. I had a mentor tell me very early on, I really appreciated this. He said, you're going to serve in multiple different churches, but if you stay in a denomination, and denomination have pros and cons, you're going to be part of this group called the ministerium. And that is almost like a second church. And he said, that's your home church. That's the church you will be in for the rest of your life. And it's been so true. I've moved around the country, but I've actually kept in touch with people, and some people have even moved back into this area. I get to meet in a group monthly with the pastor who I served with when I was 17. And we get to share stories and it's like, we've now been connected for 30 years of doing ministry, and we can speak into each other's lives. We don't meet all the time, but we've now done life in a way that I go, I can be broken around you. You know me since I was before, you know, when I was in my teens. And we can just kind of be real around each other. And that's a huge blessing for clergy. And I think, again, it's, isolation just kind of leading to a lot of concerns. And this doesn't mean we shouldn't have our own spiritual time with the Lord. 100%. We need that. That's one of the most important things. But what supply lines do is they multiply our spiritual practices. So if you do zero spiritual practices, it's going to be zero. But if you do spiritual practices and then add on support, it multiplies their impact, rather than like, well, I don't need a spiritual director. I just pray. I don't need friends. I got Jesus. I don't need a tail kicker. I got the Bible. You know, Paul kicks my butt enough, you know, so you need these people in your life. And you know, if Jesus had people in his life, if Paul had people in his life, I read recently, I was reading through Acts where Paul's on the shipwreck, and I realized there's two people on that ship with him who were not arrested. They stayed with him through all of that because I think Paul was saying, I can't be alone. Like you got to be with me. Mm-hmm. Jesus sent me two by two, sent us two by two. Can you imagine like sitting in a prison with someone going, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm sitting through this shipwreck because that's what Christians do. We don't go alone. Mm.
That's good. I do think being part of a denomination does give you that natural network. I think, so I just graduated from Northern. This is my second experience in a seminary. I went to another seminary in my early 20s. And I remember thinking after that experience, like I didn't develop friendships there. It wasn't a place that where I was going to develop close friendships. And I always longed for that because you would hear stories from pastors talking about all the friends they made in seminary and how that became their network. And my experience at Northern was very much, here is my network of people. These people love each other, support each other. They're from all different denominations, but they care for one another. It was so good. And I think having those networks of people that you can text and just say, hey, I'm having this family crisis, or, hey, I'm experiencing this thing in my church I've never seen before. How have you handled something like this? Like just to have people that you can call on outside of your own setting who care about you for you and not because of your pastoral role or, you know, because of your ministry title, I think is just really healthy. And being in a denomination gives you natural touch points for those things.
Yeah. You know, the cohort experience contributes to this, but also the intensive experience, the week long of being with students all day long for a whole week, you get to know them. But I mean, if you just drive in, go to class, get back in your car and go home, it's 10 o'clock at night, you're not going to develop that network. But the network of the intensive week along with the cohort experience over time.
Yeah.
I think is created. I don't know of any cohort, well, maybe one, that I've had where I don't think where they didn't develop this network of friendship with one another. I mean, one of the cohorts was just they just were really quiet with one another. They just didn't form like that.
There's a whole chapter in the book, and you told me to make sure I mention it's on Amazon. It's called Supply Lines. You typically have to look up Supply Lines with my name, Scott Nelson, or you start getting other books. But there is a chapter in the book about what do you do when crisis comes? How do you get through the wall? There's been a lot of work done on just the journey of faith, and clergy have to go through that journey as well. And what a lot of us don't realize is that the only way through the wall is to be broken. And not all of the pieces make it through. You will be different on the other side, and you need people to help you through so that you can help others through, but also just because you're a child of God. So I look in that chapter, look at Elijah, what happens to him? He's serving God. And I think a lot of church planters don't realize that God asked them to plant a church, not just to reach new people, but to reach more deeply into them. And he's using that process, even the pain, to actually reach you. And that's a journey you're going to want a guide to help you with.
Yeah, that's good. So I think the last one is the practical, the strategic thinkers. And this is definitely something I'm feeling at this very moment is, you know, this need for, okay, so we know where we're at right now. We know what we've built. What do we do next? Like, I think that's a question that comes up a lot. Like, okay, we've gotten this far. What's our next step? What are we building towards?
That's right.
So, and this is like out of all the ones you've listed, I think probably the most difficult to find is someone who's a little further down the road, who's seen some things specifically around church planting, who can say, here's what year 2 to 4 needs to look like, or 3 to 5, or, you know, that can kind of draw on their own experience and say, okay, here's where you're strong. Here's where you need to build. Here are some ideas that can get you from here to there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And coaches are supposed to be kind of designed for this area. But again, coming out of what we just came out of, most people, when they sit to talk, it's really soul work. And so the coaches are turning more into soul shepherds. And so, yeah, you might have to seek this person out, and it's different for every person. It might be, are you, Laura, looking more for an urban context person, a female lead pastor person, for a, you know, donut shop ministry person? So you're trying to figure those things out. But once you find them, the great thing is most church planners are very open to share their mistakes and their problems and their stuff. So as you come in like curious, there's a quote that says, church planning feels like jumping out of a plane and trying to build another plane before you crash on the way down. And you feel like we got to keep going. And again, where the interpersonal or the soul sharpener person is going to really lament with you when a problem happens, the strategic person's like, look, if you want to stop being sad about this, fix it, and you ain't going to be sad no more. You know, like, let's just solve the problem, and that'll take away all your tears. And not always true, but they can help you be very practical about how to, you know, you have the idea. I want to be really clear. These aren't people telling you what to do. It's not a supervisor or a boss.
Yeah.
You have the idea. They're the ones who go, here's how we put it into practice. Here's who to talk to first. Here's who to talk to second. Here's ways to make it better. These are also people who can tell you, here's 3 people you can call. And this is the person, Scott, I find could actually be in the church, because they might know everybody in the area. And you go, hey, we're really thinking about putting up security cameras or lights or whatever. And they go, I know who you call. Let's call this person. Tell them you know me. We'll get you a deal. No big deal. Got it. And you do. And then you're like, I don't have to know everyone. They know. I just have to know the person who knows everyone. And it saves you a ton of time. All these supply lines, even though they cost time, they save a ton of time. I consider them like a spare tire in your car. And I ask people to think about, how many of us would carry a spare tire in our car if the car manufacturer didn't put them in there? And they know you're going to get a flat from time to time. And if you do, it doesn't take no time, but it saves you a lot of time versus like, now I got no spare.
You know, these 5 support lines are not just for church planters. I mean, they're especially valuable for church planters, but I'm sitting here thinking of my pastor right now, Amanda. And I'm thinking, I'll bet you she has people who are doing these things in her life, and she's not really planning a church. I mean, it's a transition. She's new in her first year as full-time senior pastor. But I can see these things being valuable for the long haul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you're right. It's for pastors and it's for planters and pastors for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done this with, I've done seminars with businesses and nonprofits, because it, even leadership gets pretty lonely for people, because people stop viewing you as a person. They start viewing you as your position, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But you have to find a way to then go out and find your support.
Yeah, that's really good. That's helpful. This is giving me all kinds of ideas of areas where I need to be cultivating these kinds of relationships. So that's really helpful. I appreciate it. Well, I want to thank you, Scott, for being with us and for sharing your wisdom from years of pastoring and planting churches. It's been really helpful. And we look forward to being with you next time as we continue our conversation on how the kingdom took root then and how it's taking root now. Thanks so much.